committee is looking into this matter. And COPTA's definition, it refers to self-sufficiency. According to COPTA, a municipality that is not self-reliant, or if it is dependent on grants, it is considered financially non-viable. Basically, the main point is for a municipality to be self-sufficient at the end of the day and be self-reliant. A national treasury also refers to financial viability as the sustainability of the municipal budget and whether the municipality is able to sustainably meet its expenditure commitments from its own revenue and transfers. In other words, it can settle all its debts from its revenues and also from the fiscal's transfers. Furthermore, the 1998 White Paper on Local Government pointed out that some municipalities would always rely on government transfers. And I think we all will agree that this is a reality. So municipalities will not only be self-reliant in terms of their own internal revenues, but they will always also need to have to be assisted in terms of government transfers. And the issue of FFC comes in on matters of the DORA allocation. Should we continue in the manner that we are continuing? Should we also revisit the DORA allocation? Those are the matters that the committee later probably will have also to make recommendations in after these discussions. In this regard, it is sensible that in determining municipal boundaries, there should be a recognition of a balance between the elements of financial viability as defined by National Treasury, that they must be able to meet their commitments and COPTA, and also the economic development conditions of different parts of the country as informed by its developmental history, as recognized by the White Paper, that in some instances, we would need to have government transfers to assist, particularly in the rural and poorer areas. The next slide there, I will not go deeper into this because also the previous presentation alluded mostly to this, that back to basic framework of 2015, it analyzed all municipalities. And it concluded during that time that a third of municipalities were viable. Another third required some intervention, while the remaining were totally dysfunctional. Not much has changed if we look also in terms of the Auditor General's report at the moment. Mostly of our municipalities are dysfunctional, and some they need some kind of intervention. Analysis of municipalities during that time also observed that some municipalities suffered from financial distress, poor service delivery, dependence on intergovernmental transfers and low tax base, and distressed financial governance. And the presently, Chairperson, of course, given the COVID pandemic, this distress that we are referring to, it is obviously now amplified. Therefore, the impact on their financial viability, functionality, and sustainability was quite under questionable. And I'm indicating that at present moment, the situation is worsening given the conditions that are prevailing. In view of the above, COPTA in 2015 contemplated various measures to address these challenges, including the following interventions. Direct interventions, you know, your section 139, Chairperson. Let's go to the next slide. Strengthening district municipalities, and presently with the approach that government has taken, maybe it's one thing again that we have to zoom into in terms of strengthening district municipalities, because this was also done from 2015. And also the third point was the amalgamating of certain local authorities to try to improve governance and functionality, because you would find that in some smaller municipalities, there were not enough resources and also the leadership that could basically take the municipalities forward. So there was a need to amalgamate during that time. And we then also looked into the creation of Category A, the metro municipalities, and the establishing of local areas in some districts and so forth. And four, MDB could not consider E, that is the establishment of areas and making them district management areas, because those, the decision was taken in 2008 to throw the district management areas. So we only looked into amalgamating. And the minister, as the next slide is indicating, in 2015, Obabu Pravin, for the first time since the promulgation of MDA, invoked section 22.2 and applied subsection 2 and applied for certain municipalities' boundaries to be redetermined. This was highlighted in the previous presentation. The minister requested the MDB to have boundaries of 93 municipalities to be redetermined before 2016 local government elections. Minister request was motivated in terms of back-to-back basics program, as I also indicated previously and in the next coming slides. This we looked into in the previous presentation, that is slide 12, the number of cases received, the number of municipalities affected. Basically, we are trying to say, if we are looking into five municipalities, they affect certain areas. So you'll see a larger number in terms of the areas that are being affected as you do the amalgamation. Basically, that's what that slide is indicating. This was highlighted in the previous presentation. I would not go much into it. In the next slide, on average, only a third of the minister's proposals were finally approved by the board. It was also highlighted. Only 13 out of the 34 proposals by the minister were approved. Result was, for instance, the de-establishment of Mutale and Ahanang in Limpopo and the establishment of a new municipality entity, Collins Chawani, in that area. A total of 11 amalgamations were finalized in this way. If you go to the next slide, there's the graphic indication of how they were finalized. The municipalities that were affected, Musina, Tulamela, Mutale, they became Collins Chawane, and Mutale was de-established. Molemole, Polokwane, Blouberg, Ahanang was de-established. Modimolo Mokopong, and Greater Tubazi, Fitahomu, we ended up having Fitahomu towards area. The same thing, Bombela, Umchindi, we ended up with city of Bombela. The same thing, Fendersdorp, Krokwe, we ended up with JB Marx. Mangaung, Naledi, they all became one Mangaung. The same thing with the following municipalities as you see there. And the notorious Enoch Gijima also. Earlier we were referring to Bayos Nauje. Also, Enoch Gijima is one of those areas that have been lots of challenges, Chairperson. And there we end up with Bayos Nauje as discussed in the earlier presentation. But that's how we ended up being what we are, from where we are, we were in terms of those municipalities. To get to that, we are indicating the next slide, Chairperson, that the board decisions were made on the strength of information that included MDB investigation reports. We did our own internal reports, the Auditor General's reports, National Treasury reports, the issue of cash balances, everything were looked into. The MDB requires that all Section 25 objectives and factors be considered when determining or redetermining municipal boundaries, including public consultations and engagement outcomes. We had all this to look into, not only the issue of financial viability as per the request of the minister during that time. And we followed the process as per slide 16. I won't go deeper into that. In slide 17, we are highlighting the areas that we are looking into when we consider the applications. We are looking into the interdependence of people, communities, and economies. We are looking into spatial development planning. We are looking into governance and functionality, financial and administrative factors. Those are the four key areas that we are looking into, and also their sub areas as highlighted in that slide. When you go to the next slide, you will see the sub programs that also have a financial impact on the municipalities that are being considered. Transitional arrangements for amalgamated areas. You know, the rationalization of bylaws, rationalization of policies, all those on legal matters, on human resources. Earlier it was mentioned the issue of parity, where a municipal, new municipal salary bill obviously would increase because now you have to look into parity and so forth. The valuation roles, in some cases, it becomes difficult to handle this matter when a municipality was a lower grade and it is becoming a higher level grade, and now valuation has to change and so forth. Those are issues that they had to look into as the new amalgamated municipalities. And then they worked on the financial implication on these matters that you see in that slide. And then they make a request. This was also highlighted in the previous slide, the amounts that were requested, as you see there in slide 19. So that was it. But if members consider this slide, in terms of those issues that we are raising on the left column, and also the total in terms of the request, you would see there the amounts that were requested. And if you go to the next slide, you will then realize that is slide 20. COGTA requested, for instance, a billion rand plus, but the DORA allocation was almost half of the amount that was requested. And as I highlighted in the previous discussion presentation, Chairperson, these issues, they become a problem because ultimately the municipalities, in other words, they then are left with more fiscal and financial problems because we are not assisting also as a national government in ensuring that they then meet their obligations as per the amalgamations. Now, in our final slide, in the conclusion, Chairperson, we are proposing, but this obviously would need the committee to consider, that maybe in this instance, we put a moratorium on further amalgamations until all financial and inherent transitional challenges have been addressed in the current amalgamated areas. We are trying to say, Chairperson, given that the municipalities are still struggling, if now you amalgamate again two struggling municipalities, and we are fully aware that transitional challenges were not adequately addressed previously, we will still be taking the risk again, and we will be increasing on the problems that amalgamated municipalities are faced with. Obviously, it's not only the decision of the MDB on this matter. It basically needs also the committee to consider and be able to give the way forward in this regard. The second point is, it is critical that adequate transition funding, as I indicated in that slide, where, for instance, COGTA requested a billion plus, but was only provided with 400 million, that it is critical that adequate transition funding is made available on time for amalgamated areas to ensure that newly established entities effectively and properly manage the change processes and related transitional programs as some sub-programs. I indicated also earlier in the presentation, sometime not today, that for instance, if we have to learn in from other areas, I made the example of when in Germany, when we're amalgamating East and West Berlin, that the budget had to change and much of the spending had to be done in East Berlin so that the East Berlin portion can also be on par with the West Berlin sector, because the West Berlin was seen to be more developed than the East Berlin area. And when we look into the allocations, we also need to look into those type of issues. In other words, I'm trying to say the West of municipality, when we are amalgamating two municipalities, in order for the West of municipality to be at the same level of the higher municipality, you would need to have the budget skewed in that manner in terms of allocation. And two, also, there is also a need for a special service delivery development dispensation for all underdeveloped municipalities. I'm trying to say, Chairperson, when the committee is considering problems that amalgamated municipalities have been faced with in terms of financial viability, we also need to consider other municipalities that might not have been amalgamated, and also look into having a special dispensation for those underdeveloped municipalities. And I'm proposing that that should be done within the district development model to focus on addressing basic socio-economic infrastructure and other backlogs. You know, members always will be talking about the provision of water bridges in those underdeveloped municipalities, rural areas, and so forth. Now, those within the district development model, they also need to be looked into. And four, in addition to financial viability and sustainability, Chairperson, the issue of capable leadership and also having solid institutions, it's very, very key. We might look into financial viability, but financial viability also is interdependent to the issues of capable leadership in terms of deployment and so forth from parties, and also having solid institutions. In other words, institutions that are having proper legal frameworks, proper systems for municipalities to be effective instruments for service delivery in the country. That is our presentation as the MDB to the committee today. My chairperson, O Levua, Ralebua, Engost, Dabulela, my chair, and members of the committee. Thanks, colleagues.
Thank you so much, chairperson of the demarcation board. Can I hand over to Salga?
Lance.
Councillor Stofile, where's Lance? Oh, he's busy hearing. There we go. Councillor Stofile. Councillor Stofile. Lance.
Well,
where is Councillor Stofile?
Chairperson.
Well, good morning, Chairperson, and also greetings to members of the committee.
I wanted him to introduce you first.
Yes, Chair. I note a message from him that he is experiencing technical difficulties.
Okay.
So I thought maybe I should start and he can perhaps unfortunately come afterwards.
Okay, fine. Proceed.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Also, may I extend the greetings to MECs who are present with us in the meeting. The Chairperson of the MDB, the DG, the CEO of the MDB, as well as HODs, mayors, speakers, municipal managers that are with us, as well as the SALCA leadership. Chair, I will, for the first time, not use the 20 minutes that is allocated. I will use much less than that because much has been said in the preceding presentations from both the department as well as COCTA, and I would rather department as well as MDP. And this was the menu for our presentation, quickly reflecting on what was promised, what is the reality and the response. The background I would not cover because it has previously been covered. Our own assessment of mergers and amalgamations. Chairperson, our focus is only going to be on mergers and amalgamations as per the invite for this conversation. Then practical impact, which has also been touched on. And then lastly, conclude on some recommendations we would want to make to the committee. In terms of the promise, Chairperson, that has been made to the nation. We all know that the MDB is responsible for demarcation in the country, but also we are aware of the imperatives of demarcation, which was also touched on in both of the previous presentations. Centrally, that demarcation should really improve economic, social, administrative, and financial sustainability, but also more importantly, it must create more financially viable municipalities. That is the promise that has been made around the area of demarcation. So what are the current realities? The reality is when one reflects on post-demarcation is that we have seen in many of the demarcations, a degree of varied urbanization between municipalities that have been merged. And we have seen your more urbanized municipalities taking over some of your perhaps a bit more rural municipalities. Case in that we can refer to is in the Mangaung. We can also refer to Polokwane. As well as to Tshwane merger with the then Kungwini. Also we have seen there are municipalities that are losing population, and it is your more rural municipalities that are losing people to the cities. And an example typically is a municipality that has been referred to throughout. This morning, the Dr. Bears Modia that loses a lot of the Nelson Mandela Bay Metro. But we've that are being applied across the municipalities to engaging with communities. There are many other points that could be made, Chairperson. How do we restore the promise that that demarcation leads to a better life for all? How do we restore that particular promise? At SALCA, we have done our own introspection. It's introspection, and we 2 years ago initiated a research. Very comprehensive research to assist us to understand the effects of redetermination of boundaries, to also understand the effects of the transition of each municipality from where they were to what they are now created to be, but also looking at reviewing the scale of redeterminations that have been made by the MDP, but focusing on the last term of office. And based on this comprehensive study, it enables us to make contributions to a conversation such as this. But as I'm saying, whilst the study itself was quite broad, we would only focus on what the study has raised on the mergers and amalgamations in the last term of office. This slide has already been covered by the MDB, so I'm not going to go through that, but merely to indicate our focus has largely been on these amalgamations. So we have had, in particular, the two metros affected by amalgamations. And then on mergers, there are 18 municipalities that have been affected on mergers, and they are listed across the respective provinces. We want to reflect on some of the examples, Chairperson, and we want to indicate upfront, we deliberately chose three examples that tell three different stories. And whilst they had all gone through either a merger or a amalgamation, the stories and the impact has really been different. And let's start in the Free State with Mangaung, and they will give us more details later on in depth. Yes, Chair?
Can I ask Councillor Hadewe to mute his microphone from Kosovo Nagami Zuma Municipality, please? Can I plead again with members to stop just disrupting the meetings? Very disruptive. You can't be attending meetings doing other things. Make sure that your microphone is muted, please. It's very disruptive, honestly. Proceed, Lance.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. As I was saying, the Mangaung example, when Naledi municipality was merged with Mangaung with effect from the start of this term of office in August 2016. And what has resulted in is that we have seen a decrease in Mangaung's population density. We have seen an almost 50% growth in the area to nearly a 10,000 square kilometer area. We have seen the amalgamation of what was really a functional municipality with a dysfunctional municipality and a dysfunctional area. And there are two risks that were faced around municipal viability, and it's the impact on governance, and then it's the impact on democracy, which were both potentially compromised. When you look at the audit outcomes of Mangaung Municipality pre-amalgamation and post-amalgamation, you can see this is the picture. So where this municipality was doing very well in the years 2013, 2014, 2014, 2015, as well as 2015, 2016, and moving into the transition. So starting the financial year prior to the election, getting into the election, going through a merger, coming out of that merger, we then see that municipality moving to a disclaimer. And then you also see things are improving again in the following year. So that's the audit outcomes. But then there's also the unfortunate incident of interventions in that municipality. And you can see that perhaps as early as 2017, this municipality experienced financial challenges. Now, the question is there a relationship between the financial challenges of that municipality and the merging of that municipality with Naledi? But factually, the municipality has had serious financial challenges since 2017, and you now see the municipality being subjected to a 139 financial intervention in terms of Section 1395 of the Constitution. Another example, Randwest municipality in Gauteng province, essentially merging the Randfontein and Western Area municipalities to now become the Randwest city local municipality. And essentially what you see here is that at the time, both these municipalities were at the risk of potential collapse, but also as you were merging them, they were also having equal opportunities to improve. So the indications were quite clear that merging them could potentially result in improving overall conditions within that municipality. They had gone through the exercise of harmonizing their policies, their tariffs, UHR-related matters. They were quite fortunate to, within the 18 months of the 2016 elections, to have the top management in place. They were able to address the disparities in salaries. However, it did come at a huge expense of the municipality. And essentially, that municipality inherited the struggling finances of the two previous municipalities. And as a consequence, you have seen that it did impact on the cash flow. But when you look at the audit outcomes, Chairperson, it presents a fairly positive picture. So where you could see here that municipalities 3 years preceding the merger, both of them were struggling, adverse opinions. In 2014, 2015, you see Randfontein improving, Western Area retaining the adverse audit outcome. But then things started gradually improving over time. And you have seen this municipality for the first 3 years of being merged, they have achieved an unqualified audit. And I must indicate, Chair, that a lot of credit must give to the support that has come from all role players within the IGR space to ensure that, particularly from a financial management point of view, this municipality is well on track. Dr. Bayes Nodier was referred to earlier, and many of the slides also find expression here, but this is probably one of the more difficult mergers. And you saw three municipalities merging into a single municipality, into a new entity. And what it came with is this single municipality almost taking up 50% of the landmass of the entire district of the Sarabartman district municipality. You also see a municipality that has a low population density. You are merging small municipalities with large areas. You are merging municipalities without a rate base. And this without a rate base is important for the next few slides that I will be reflecting on. You also have to now ensure that your public representatives have to cover larger areas. And if you look at, one would have been keen to see a Treasury presentation on all of these mergers, but essentially Treasury confirming that there's no improvement in the financial score of this municipality. There are further challenges that the assets of the municipalities, of this municipality, far less than the current liabilities of the municipality, so that liabilities are sitting at 280 million and assets are sitting at 52 million. The obvious thing that you can do when you add up the numbers is that this municipality essentially is not financially viable. Municipality has no cashback reserves and it has a high number of creditors. Costs are reflected on this slide, and the point that really should be made is that this municipality that is currently sitting with 62 million assets inherited debt of 65 million rand. So when they started off on the 4th of August, post the elections on the 3rd of August, they started in a hole, and that hole was a 65 million rand hole. And in the context of three municipalities that had no rate base or a very limited rate base, one could tell it would have been almost impossible for them to recover from that hole that they found themselves in, to the extent that that particular hole has just become bigger over the last 3 years. From an audit point of view, it is a case that just shows that whilst two of the three municipalities has been, from a financial management point of view, been fairly stable, there is a municipality, one of them, that was fairly unstable. And the consequence of putting the three together is this bad picture that they have not been able to get themselves out of the hole that in which they find themselves. So we have seen three disclaimers in the first 3 years of this particular merger. Chairperson, there are many practical examples on the impact of a merger, and these were covered in the previous presentation. There's an impact on all of these areas, which are largely in the administration. There are HR risk, human resource impact of demarcation. It was referred to in the previous two slides. There's an impact on infrastructure provision and maintenance across the three areas. There's an impact on revenue and expenditure. And I'm not going into the detailed chapter because I think both the MDB as well as COCTA has covered it. So from where we are sitting, Chair, the conclusions we are reaching based on the extensive study that was conducted, research conducted, is that whilst there was planning, in our view, it was limited planning, limited change management, limited costing, and the provision of resources for the transition. We have clearly seen that whilst teams were, as COCTA has presented, were established and were doing work, the reality is that not sufficient has been done. And I think we must draw lessons therefrom. But also, we need to look at a team leading up to, during, and post a merger, so that it is not just looking at the pre, but look at the entire value chain as things are unfolding. But we have also not seen, we have also of the view that a due diligence study should be commissioned to assess the financial situation of affected municipalities. So the recommendations we would want to make, which are in line with what the chairperson of the MDB has presented, very similar in nature. So if we want to ensure municipal sustainability, we need to make sure that we investigate the options to raise revenue levels, and particularly the transfer of municipalities, which have been lower at lower levels of economic opportunity. We must ensure that there's transitional funding. So a three-year budget should be provided, not a single-year budget. A three-year budget should be provided for merger to allow for both the planned and unplanned costs of such a merger. And then an impact assessment should be done, as I've said in the previous slide. And then lastly, on the demarcation legacy, we should really steer away, and we are very encouraged by current developments within the MDB, that to try and delay any further demarcation and only deal with it when absolutely necessary. But demarcation should not be seen as a solution for viability and sustainability, because the picture as it currently stands shows that indeed it has not worked. If it has worked, as I've presented in the Redworth example, it has limited success. And we're also saying, Chairperson, as we are talking about the Intergovernmental Monitoring Support and Interventions Bill, these recommendations should also be considered as we are finalizing areas of that particular bill. And that's our presentation, Chairperson. Thank you very much. Maybe I could have given back to Councillor Stoffler, who was unable. I hope he's been able to connect now.
Thank you so much, Lance. Is Councillor Stofile back? Before that, Councillor Stofile? Lance, is Councillor Stofile back or not?
Jefferson, I see him connected, but he may be having challenges.
Of network.
Yes, sir. I've also joined you on the Bundu side.
Welcome. Welcome to the Bundu side. Welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm often cut from time to time. I don't know what is happening with our network on this side. Chair, I think just to say, it is proper for us to emphasize,
Chair,
as government of the people, by the people.
Yes.
In whatever we do it collectively in a cooperative manner. In the presentations that have been made, starting from COCTA and a little bit of what I've heard on the demarcation board and what we are presenting, beginning to point at the point where government is operating in silos, is not operating in a cooperative manner, as Parliament adopted the framework of cooperative governance. And this assessment are beginning to point at that point. The second point is that if you just enter on issues of amalgamation without a proper planning and believe putting one next to one is level and possibly it can be two and therefore address the challenges, you'll face challenges such as Enoch Mgijima and Dr. Besnodie and other municipalities that have been put together. And if you look deeper into these municipalities as they are struggling, it's not because of their own choosing. It's because of those that are making policies and laws decided to put them together without financially supporting them. And it will create problems going into the future. And the problem always, it will be blamed to municipalities or a particular provincial MEC of COCTA that is not supporting. But what is the role of the government as a whole? Because taking a decision of putting together a different framework of municipalities, it's a government decision. And why should it then, a government is not backing that program for it to succeed? And this is the issues that we want to highlight to the committee. And we are happy, really, that the committee currently is actively wanting to answers on difficult questions. Unlike in the previous, where policies will be adopted, but there is no one is accounting. No one is accounting about the weaknesses, and the weaknesses will be directed to municipalities. Whereas everybody in the value chain has one way or another responsibility in making sure that the community receives services that it's supposed to receive. And in this case, is a crystal clear case that there is a weakness in the manner in which we do things and we operate in silos. The other one don't come and play. For instance, transitional grant. Why, for instance, one presentation made by the demarcation board, COCTA, according to its own anticipation, it was over R1 billion. And then you give them less than what they've requested because others believe they are so important than others, as if it's not government of the people by the people. That is a challenge that we must confront. Thank you very much, sir.
Honorable Mkalipi, you wanted to say something?
No, Chair, I wanted to ask why Councillor Peggy Stofile is struggling with the network during these difficult times. It was supposed to be in court now there in Mangaung. So there's a network coverage there. So he must tell us where he is. He's struggling with the network.
Order, I'm coming.
Oh, okay. So stop poking our chair, guys. Stop poking the chair, saying the chair is in Bundus. Also in Bundus. Go to court, Chief.
Kalepe.
Gary, let's say Gary. The presentation was loaded. Where is it? Okay, is it two?
Kalepe must go to Brackenfell, Chair.
I will go with you there, since we are from Cape Town.
So, Jerry, who's doing the presentation? You must first introduce yourself next.
Thank you very much. I'm Wendy Fenner from National Treasury.
Can you hear, colleagues?
We lost her, Chairperson.
Wendy, come back, please.
For the opportunity to make this presentation and all protocols observed. Next slide, please. My presentation won't be long and we'll be focusing on the following issues. Firstly, how we were involved in the process. I'll skip over the guidance provided by National Treasury because in the presentation of DECOC, they already went into the details in terms of the support that we provided, and it was really a collaborative exercise between a number of stakeholders in the process. And then we'll take you through the details of the submission that we made to the Municipal Demarcation Board and issues there. We'll also touch on how the amalgamations impacted on the grants that go to those municipalities. And then we'll also, in the end, provide an update of where the amalgamations currently stand in terms of their state of finances. Next slide. Okay, and this was already discussed in detail. The issue here is that there were two sets of recommendations made. In the first set of demarcations, amount of 139 million was made available over the MTF. And then when further demarcations were announced, a further 300 million was made available over the process. In one of the former presentations, a remark was made that the amount that was requested and the amount allocated is not 100% the same. And the reason why is we had put a task team together between National Treasury, DECOC, the FFC as well, and we determined the principles on the issues that will be funded through the grant. And based on those principles, we then got to that amount jointly. So it wasn't just a National Treasury determined amount. Next slide. And in the process of the redemarcation, or before the redemarcations took place, we received a letter or request from the then chairperson of the Municipal Demarcation Board that requested us to answer a number of questions. Some of them actually had to do with how do we define viability and financial viability, and to provide analysis of the proposals that were received by the Minister of COCTA at that stage. We then did that work and we provided the input to the Municipal Demarcation Board on 2 June 2015. Next slide, please. Like I said, we'll skip through this because DECOC already dealt with it. In terms of how we define financial viability or viability, and where's the differences between financial viability and viability more broadly, we indicated if you look at financial viability, you would only look at the budget and whether the budget is sustainable from an expenditure and a revenue perspective. And when you look at a budget from a revenue and expenditure commitment, you need to look at both angles. In terms of own revenue and transfers, so often it is argued that a municipality should be viable on its own resources, but the fiscal system has been designed to provide transfers to municipalities where there's a gap between what they can realistically raise themselves and the expenditure commitments. But what is very important, if you look at own revenue collection, you need to look at the ability of municipalities to collect revenues. And you shouldn't look at what municipalities are currently collecting, because those two will not necessarily be the same. We know, for example, that there's a lot of gaps in revenue collection in municipalities where, for example, they would not have proper and or full property valuation rolls. So it means that people that should be paying property rates, for example, are not paying property rates because they're not included on the roll. The same with regard to expenditure. You shouldn't look at what municipalities are currently expending in terms of their budgets. But if they were run efficiently and effectively, what that expenditure should be. And for example, I'm going to touch quite a controversial issue, but it was also touched in previous presentations. If you look at expenditure commitments, you need, for example, to also look at personnel expenditure and the number of staff employed, but also the salaries paid to those individuals. And then also the amount of consultants employed, for example. So many municipalities are not currently, in terms of expenditure, operating at ideal levels. The expenditure levels are too high and their own revenue collections are too low. And for that, it is one of the contributing factors that's resulting in some municipalities experiencing financial difficulties. But if you look at then the broader viability definitions, you also need to look at, for example, economic viability. And that, for example, looks at the ability to attract jobs and actually to be employed in an area. So it looks at the economic well-being in that area. So it's broader than just financial viability. We also need to look at institutional viability and how a municipality is functioning from a governance and institutional perspective. And then very, very importantly, we also need to look at service delivery viability, and that is the ability in terms of a municipality to provide services sustainable to its community at set levels. Not all these viability criteria is necessarily complementary. For example, you could have a situation where you look from a service delivery viability perspective that will be arguing that you draw the municipal boundaries larger so that you can have economies of scale and scope. But then if you look at financial viability, it would be better if you draw the municipal boundaries smaller and thank you. Next slide. The next slide, what this slide tries to explain is to indicate that the whole grant system, where the transfers are then made available through the Annual Division of Revenue Bill and Act, indicates how the system has been designed. So if you look at the right-hand column, what that indicates is the amount of transfers that go to local government in terms of the different types and categories of municipalities. Before we jump there, you first look at the left-hand column. What the dark blue line indicates is the number of personal income tax that's collected in an area. And what the light blue line indicates is the amount of transfers that that area receives. So, for example, if you look at a category A or a metro municipality, it will show that it collects the largest amount of personal income tax in the country. But if you look then at the light blue line, you could say they don't receive all that money back. The transfers that they get is substantially less. If you then look at the intermediate city, you could see that their revenue collection in terms of national taxes are also higher than what they receive. If you look at the small towns that with an economic base, the same applies. But then if you start going to look at smaller municipalities with a more limited revenue base, referred to as B3 municipalities, and then the rural municipalities that's referred to as B4, you could see that there's less national taxes collected. That is the national taxes. Why is it important? That is what's shared between national provinces and local government in terms of transfers. And you could see in terms of B3 the transfers they receive is more than what the taxes they contribute. And if you look then at rural municipalities, you could see that it's substantially higher than the national taxes that they contribute to the national fiscus, which shows the redistribution impact of the system. And if you then go to the right-hand column, this then indicates the amount of transfers that you get per household for the different types of municipality. So if you look at per household, you could see that the red column is the equitable share allocations that the municipality gets, and the grey part is the conditional grants that the municipality gets. And you could per around 1,000, a metro will get 2.6 in terms of equitable share. And if you compare it against a rural municipality, it is 7.2. So you could see it is more than double. If you look also at the conditional grants, just comparing a metro again, it's 2.3 compared to rural municipalities, that's slightly less than double, it is 4.2%. So this is very important to note, is that the system is designed to give per household larger allocation to rural municipalities than what the more urban municipalities will get. And this whole system has been designed to acknowledge that. Next slide, please. If you then look at this slide, in our response that we gave to the NDB, we raised, before the mergers were even in place, we raised a number of concerns, and some of those concerns we already noted in previous presentations as well. And we firstly indicated that if you redemarcate a municipality, it is very, very disruptive and also very expensive. In terms of best practice that we've learned, it takes a municipality that's redemarcated at least 2 to 3 years just to stabilize in terms of you know, revising their budgets, reinstitutionalizing their the governance or organizational structures, and that takes time, and it's also got cost implications. And then a very important point that we made is that the system is designed specifically to give larger allocations to small municipalities. So what will happen is that, and I'll get to it in more detail in later slides, is that if you amalgamate a number of small municipalities, the allocations can actually be less in terms of the grants that they get than what they will get as individual standalone municipalities. Then another concern that we also raised is that if you amalgamate municipalities, what often happens is that their grading will also go up. So for example, a municipality that's a grade 1, 2 or 3 could become a grade 4, and that could push up the salaries of the staff concerned, which will also have an adverse impact. Then we basically also indicated that it's unlikely that the redemarcated municipalities from a financial viability perspective will be better off than before the amalgamations. Thank you. Next slide. And then just to highlight the point that I've made with regard to the equitable share, the proposal that we made to the Municipal Demarcation Board, that the allocations in terms of the grant system could actually be less than what they received before. Just to highlight that the local government equitable share...
we have lost there, I suppose.
Yes, we lost the presenter, Chair.
Yes.
Chairperson, she's been muted. She needs to unmute.
Thank you. With regard to the basic services component, it's the largest share or a portion of the local government equitable share, and it is designed to provide poor households with the access to free basic services. So it doesn't provide all households with free basic services. It just provides poor households with free basic services. And in terms of the equitable share formula, two old age pensions are then determined if you receive below that amount that you are deemed to be poor and that you're entitled to free basic services. So what would have happened when the municipalities merge, you would get a richer municipality being merged with a poorer municipality. So it could actually impact on the number of poor households within that municipality. For example, you would get a municipality where the poverty rate in one municipality is 60% and in another municipality it is 90%. So when the formula is then run, it's not run on the 60%. It is run in terms of the amended poverty threshold that's applicable for the whole area. And that information we get from StatsSA. Then if you look at the institutional component, and that is not going to all municipalities, where the basic services component goes to all municipalities that's got poor households, and that's all municipalities. And it's also linked in whether they provide water, sanitation, electricity and refuse removal, because we've also got district municipalities and local municipalities. So it goes to the municipalities that's authorized for that service. If you look at the institutional component, the community services component, and the special support for councillor remuneration, that does not go to all municipalities. Poverty criteria in terms of being unable to collect most of their revenues through own revenue sources. So it's specifically designed not to go to the larger urban municipalities, but just to go to smaller, more rural municipalities. So if you look at the institutional component and you have three small municipalities, because it's calculated by the base allocation, times the number of councillors, times the number of councillor seats. So that base allocation, if you have three small municipalities, you'll get three base allocations. If you merge it into one small municipality, you will get one base allocation. So that means that two base allocations will fall away. And we alerted the Municipal Demarcation Board of this issue. The same applies with regard to the community services component. What it will look at is, again, your ability to collect own revenues. And if you're not able to collect own revenues for property rates, for example, then it's acknowledged in the system. And then a specific allocation is also made available to smaller and more rural municipalities to fund issues that's community services based. And it will be things like firefighting, for example, and maintaining of roads and the like. Then the last one, if you look at, and that's an allocation that's just targeted and it's a subsidy support. It's again an acknowledgement that the more rural, smaller municipalities with a limited own revenue base will struggle to fund the full councillor remuneration out of their own pockets, and therefore it's a subsidy support to grade 1, 2, and 3 municipalities. So what happened also when the amalgamation took place, a number of municipalities that were graded, let's say grade 1, 2, or 3, then were graded at grade 4, for example, and that meant they were not receiving that component anymore. Next slide, please. Next slide.
I've moved it, Wendy. I'm on the group of transfers. or you're skipping?
No, it's not showing on my side.
Let me try again.
Okay, what the next slide shows, yeah.
Is it showing, Wendy? It is on my end.
Yeah, now it's showing up. Thank you. What this slide shows, and it's very important, and conditional grant allocations to the municipalities concerned. And if you look at, for example, at Bayer's, Dr. Bayer's New Deer, you'll see in 2015-16, they received an allocation of 87.5 million rand. And then you see for, if the allocations then get right-sized, the allocations were done over 3 years. So you could see in the subsequent 2 years that the allocations then dropped to the right-sized allocations in terms of how the formula generates the allocations. But after that right-sizing has happened and they, the allocations then start showing an increase again. So if you can see from 2017-18 to 2018-19, the allocations start growing again. And the same applies to Enoch Gidjama, where the allocations first had to be right-sized, and it's got to do with the fact that some of the equitable share allocations that were targeted to small municipalities had to fall away in terms of the formula. If you then look at the conditional grant allocations, many of these allocations, some of the allocations are determined in terms of formula, and some of the allocations are determined in terms of the national departments that's responsible for administering their grants. And what this slide indicates is, again, just indicating what is happening to the allocations over time. But what is also very important to highlight here is that we should not just focus on what the amounts are that's allocated to conditional grants, but we should also look at the ability of the municipalities concerned to spend those allocations. And if you look at the bottom column, it actually indicates the percentage in terms of which municipalities have been spending the conditional grants. And this is the information that's reported by the municipalities. And if you can see, for example, if you look at Drs. Bayer and Udea, you could see that the spending level on the conditional grants are very, very, very low. It is around half of the allocations that's given, and even less than half of the percent of the allocations that's spent. And you could see there's a consistent trend along municipalities. There's basically only one municipality where the spending has been average, not even good, and that's the city of Mbumwela. So what is quite key, and the point has been made previously as well, what is important is that there also be a link to providing support to the municipalities to be able to spend the allocations that they receive in the correct way, because infrastructure delivery is very important to support service delivery as well. So if there's bad spending on infrastructure conditional grants, it's also got an adverse impact on the number of services that can be provided to the poor, because conditional grants are intended to put in place the infrastructure that's needed to provide services to poor households. Thank you. Next slide. What the next slide indicates is indicating what we've picked up since the mergers have taken place and what we've picked up from analysing the budgets of those municipalities. And I'll be handing over to one
person who's doing the... Wendy, can the person who's putting on the slides remove this other stuff that they're blocking the presentation?
Thank you. Can I then please hand over to Mandla Gilimani that will take us through the slide. Thank you.
Mandla, proceed, Mandla.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Mandla Gilimani. I'm the budget analyst in the local government budget analysis unit. So the results that are showing here, Chair, are based on the 2018-2019 audit outcomes, which is the latest audit information that we've got. So if we look at the results based on these amalgamated municipalities, what we see there is that most municipalities do not even have sufficient cash. That is, as a norm, we have at least a cash coverage of 1 to 3 months that the municipalities should have in the case whereby customers cannot pay. But what we've observed is that in most of these mesh municipalities, they would not even survive even 1 month to pay their fixed cost if customers could boycott the payments. So most of them also do not have the sufficient cash and investments to meet their current obligations. Most of them are inefficient in collecting debt from customers. It takes them way longer than the standard 30 days that municipalities should take to collect the outstanding debt. Likewise, we see that year on year, the creditors of these municipalities continue to grow, and they cannot be able to pay their creditors or suppliers on time within the 30 days of receiving the invoice. We also have a standard in terms of the capital expenditure that municipalities should pay, should spend, where we say that at least they should spend between 10 to 20% of their total budget on capital expenditure. But these municipalities, you find that most of them, they are below the 10% in terms of their capital expenditure allocated as a percentage of the total budget of the municipalities. Surprisingly, as Wendy has indicated, even on conditional grants, you find that they mostly underspend. And in terms of the repairs and maintenance, they grossly underspend on that as well. They also borrow less because most of them they have cash flow challenges. And according to our analysis, most of them, you find that their budgets are not funded. And in terms of our indicators that we look at, they are classified, most of them, as financially distressed. As Salga has indicated earlier on, they also have challenges with the Eskom debt. You find that their Eskom debt keeps escalating since the amalgamation. Also, as indicated, most of them have got unfavorable audit outcomes, where you find that most of them have got persistent disclaimers. Some of them are qualified. So what we can say is that most of them are struggling with liquidity challenges. So you can see that the measure didn't really help. They have challenges in terms of financial sustainability, which ultimately affects the service delivery in these municipalities. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. This is our thank you, Chair. I'll just quickly take you through this. Yes, thank you. I'll do the last slide. It's just important to indicate that National Treasury can only provide technical input into this process, and we did so. And what is very important is after the municipalities have been put in place, is the actual support that's required is very critical to the success. And then the points have already been made that any future redemarcations be very, very carefully considered and that there's various criteria that the Municipal Demarcation Board needs to take into account. And what the plea from National Treasury side is that the financial viability aspect of that really be prioritized in that consideration. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Treasury. Is the Free State ready?
We are ready.
Allow you. You are ready.
Yes, thank you, Chair.
Who's calling me?
Chairperson.
Who's calling the chairperson?
Chairperson is the HOD for Copta.
In Free State.
Yes, Chairperson. I'm not sure if
I think let's start with the meeting. I'm not going to switch off.
No. Somebody is messing me up now. Okay, proceed, HOD. Maybe the MEC wants to say something.
Yes.
I see the MEC of NCC.
No,
before
you
start, HOD, Kopka.
Thank you, the Chairperson.
MEC.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. To the Chairperson of the Demarcation Board, SALGA, National COCTA, National Treasury, and all representatives from province, Chair, today I have with us.
Let me see.
Yes.
Down. Can you sit on your computer so that the colleagues can see you? There you go.
Now, thank you, Chair. Chair, I was just acknowledging the Chairperson of the Demarcation Board. I was acknowledging you, Chairperson Faith Mutambi, SALGA Chair and Leadership, National Representative of COCTA, National Treasury, and Leadership from Provinces. Chair, today I have with us the HOD of COCTA. The MEC had provided a note of apology. So we'll provide opening remarks, but with us we have the Metro Chairperson. Our own Metro is here in its numbers, represented by the Mayor, the Speaker, the Chief Whip, and the MMC of Corporate Services. So they have prepared a presentation. Chair, the presentation would outline background to the amalgamation progress. It will also outline the current situation with Mangaung Metro. It will talk about financial management, governance and leadership, service delivery, the intervention team, pre and post-merger observations, and other observations based on the terms of reference that was provided by the Portfolio Committee. Let me also acknowledge the members, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, Chair, through you. And if I could hand over to Mangaung Metro, Chair, to start the presentation, and then the HOD of COCTA can come in, wrap up matters from the intervention perspective and also from the leadership of the province, from cooperative governance, and I could come in to conclude together with the mayor and the political leadership of the municipality. Through you, Chair,
Can we do it either way, MEC? Can we allow the HOD to first introduce the matters? Then we'll allow the metro to come. Then you'll come later, please.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. HOD? HOD, COCTA, Free State?
Chairperson, good morning. Let me greet the leadership that is present in this meeting. And
can, can the leadership see you as well? There you go.
Okay. Thanks, Chairperson. I must indicate that I'm still attending a funeral, but it's okay, Chairperson. I am ready to do the presentation and also take questions where possible. Let me further indicate that protocol is observed in terms of the leadership that is present in this meeting. I would therefore request that our presentation be flighted so that I can take the meeting through what we have actually prepared. While the secretariat may be busy with putting our presentation on the screen, I will indicate in terms of the layout, Chairperson, in the meantime, switch off the camera so that I talk to the presentation chairperson, if you allow me.
Yes, we wanted the meeting to first see you. Then you can switch it off.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, Chairperson, we have prepared a presentation in terms of what was the situation of Mangaung pre the amalgamation and what is the situation post the amalgamation. And our presentation covers the following areas: the financial viability and feasibility of the municipality, and what do we actually mean by that. And what is, like I said, the situation, or what was the situation pre the amalgamation, and what is the situation post amalgamation. And what we are doing is that we are giving the comparison of the audited financial statement for the period 2015-16 financial year, and then also the period post amalgamation, which covers 18-19 financial year, around the following areas: current assets, non-current assets, current liabilities, non-current liabilities, total net assets, surplus or deficit, whether a municipality is still a going concern, how the government grant and subsidy have performed, and what is the situation with the unspent conditional grant, and the movement of cost drivers, the bulk purchases and line losses, salary and allowances versus the equitable share, the expenditure classification around the unauthorized expenditure, irregular expenditure, fruitless and wasteful expenditures, and the performance around the consequence management, whether these issues are being followed by the Metro, the audit outcomes, internal control deficiencies that have been highlighted by the AG, issues relating to governance and oversight, consumer debtors, impairments, trade creditors for a period 2018-19, and predetermined objectives for 18-19 and performance management. Chair, we know that for us to be confident that the municipality, in the next slide please, is financially viable, the following areas need to be actually reflected: satisfaction among the constituents, sound and stable institutional management, accountable and transparent allocation and use of financial and other resources, consumer satisfaction with service delivery, a democratic and value-driven system of governance, public participation and consultation. And in all of the above, what we are seeing is that the political stability in any institution takes a center stage. Next slide, please. When we talk about the financial viability or sustainability of an institution, what do we actually mean? Yes, Chair, we all agree that for us to be confident around the financial viability and sustainability of an institution, we're looking at the adequacy of the tax base, sound financial management and governance with minimal audit fundings, economic stability within the jurisdiction, limited dependence on grants and allocation to remain operational. Chairperson, however, our analysis also reflects that factors such as poverty, unemployment, and other socio-economic variables, the tax base of some municipalities, are highly constrained. And that is a real fact, which is confronting a number of municipalities, not only the Metro. In all above instances, financial viability may well be permanently affected. If the situation does not change around the unemployment, it may lead to a permanent situation where a municipality may not be able to derive the revenue because or rates and taxes, thus confirming the less income for municipalities. The issues relating to governance, if governance has collapsed and oversight, these are the issues that affect good governance in the municipality. Chair, let's go to the next slide, which then paints a picture around the financial viability as compared between the financial year 15-16 and then financial year 18-19. So, Chair, we are showing there what was the situation in terms of the number of current assets in 2016-15, and what is the situation now in 18-19? For instance, let's start with the first one, inventories. In 15 and 18, the inventory of the municipality was standing or hovering at 438 million. It increased in 2018 because the amalgamation saw movable of other assets coming into the metro, and that's why there's that increase in 2018-19 as compared to 15-16. So you will see, Chair, because in the interest of time, I don't necessarily have to go through item by item, but that is the presentation we're making. But what is of worth to actually mention, the VAT receivables got highly affected in an investment during the period 18-19 as compared to 15-16. And that has actually made the metro to actually suffer financially. An analysis of consolidated and amalgamation presents the following in the next slide in a very dramatic form. In a schematic representation. The period 15-16 is represented by the color blue, and the period 18-19 is represented by the color orange or yellow. I'm colorblind. My slide tells me that it's orange. So those are some of the deficiencies that exist. If you compare inventories during that period, it actually increased in 18-19, as I have already indicated, because of the assets from these amalgamated municipalities. Consumer receivables actually increased. But if you look at cash and cash receivables, Chair, in 15-16, it was actually high, but it became low in 18-19. The reason being that these municipalities that were amalgamated with the metro did not have enough cash base. So that's why there's actually cash decline in terms of the finances of the metro. The next slide, non-current assets, Chairperson. You will also see that in 15-16, investment property were standing, or the metro was standing at 1.4 billion, but it increased in 18-19 due to some of the properties accumulated from the amalgamated municipalities, including the property plant and equipment. And those are the figures that we are representing. The next slide will show a schematic representation of what I have just spoken about. You will see the color blue represent the period between 15 and 16, and the color orange or yellow represent the period between 18 and 19 financial year. And, you know, that schematic representation, Chair, speaks volumes if you compare what was the situation in 15-16 and what is the situation in 18-19. The next slide, please. Current liabilities. You will see that the liabilities of the municipality were very actually low if you look at the total during the period 15-16, and it actually increased in 18-19 as a result of the amalgamation. And the increase registered an amount of 1.3 billion. So that is why currently the city is in a financial distress, and hence the intervention. And the next slide actually deals with the schematic representation of the facts I've already reflected on. And the color green represents the period between 15 and 16, and the color blue represents the period between 18 and 19 financial years. So you will see in terms of that schematic representation, Chair, that situation was better off in 15-16 financial year as compared to 18 and 19 financial year around all those items as listed. Next slide, please. Chair, on the non-current liabilities, you will see that operating lease liability, the metro did not have liability in 15-16 financial year, but also had one currently after amalgamation, because the amalgamated towns were actually not having enough revenue base. That's why you will have an increase in terms of the non-current liabilities. And the total that you see there, it was 2.4 in 15-16, and in 18-19, 2.8, which registered an increase of about 398 million. Next slide, please. Chair, the next slide simply just represents what I've spoken about in terms of the schematic representation, the period between 15 and 16 and 18 and 19. And it tells what the situation was in 15, 16, and what the situation is between 18 and 19 financial years. Next slide, please. Total net asset of the municipality. You will see that in 15, 16 financial year, Chair, the total net asset of the municipalities was standing at 13.4 billion, and it further increased in 18-19 to be 15.7 billion, and that increase registered as 2.2 billion because the assets of the municipalities that were amalgamated with the metro made an increase in terms of the total net assets. And the next slide also confirms that increase in terms of the net assets between the period 15-16 financial year and the period 18-19 financial year. The next slide, please, that deals with the surplus and deficit. In 15 financial year, the metro had a net surplus of about 11 billion, and now in 18-19, they are in a deficit of 268 million as a result of the amalgamation. Due to the reasons, the towns that are amalgamated with the metro do not have revenue base. You would know Diversdorp, Wepenaar, Van Stadensres, including the name has just ran out of my head. Okay? My apologies. Soutpan. So those are the areas without the economic base. And you would recall that both Botshabelo and Tabanjo, as former homelands, do not necessarily have the revenue base. In actual fact, Bloemfontein is the town, is the one that is only single-handedly carrying the metro. And then now with the amalgamation of these other towns that do not have the revenue base, they actually created a lot of financial stress for the municipalities. The next slide deals with the going concern. Chair, what we are reflecting there is that the metro's ability to raise revenue, including grant allocation, made it impossible for the council to meet its obligation. You would see there that on the 30th of June 2019, council sustained a deficit of 268 million as compared to the period prior amalgamation. And this has got a very direct impact on how the city is able to provide services to communities and also meet its constitutional obligation. And that's what we're reflecting, that the amalgamation itself has had a negative impact on how the city is able to meet its financial viability. The next slide deals with government grants and subsidies. You will see, Chair, that in the period 15-16, the total equitable share, including a number of grants, was standing at 920 million. Now, with the amalgamation of these other towns, it actually increased by 19% to 1 billion, which represents an increase of about 176, because those grants that were previously allocated to Naledi were now allocated to the metro. But the reason why some of the grants have not been used in terms of the DORA provisions is because the municipality, you know, inherited quite a lot of financial problems from these amalgamated municipalities. And also, it increased the number of workers. The compensation of the budget of the municipality or of the metro is currently constrained as a result of the amalgamation. Even though when it comes to grants, we then can see that improvement. But the grants were also used to make sure that they cover on the shortfall of the compensation. And that's why the intervention was then therefore necessary to try and address these issues that came as a result of the amalgamation process. And in the next slide, we are then showing in terms of the schematic representation, and the period 15-16 is represented by the color blue, and the period between 18-19 is represented by orange. And you see, in terms of the pictures there, that the amalgamation has had serious benefit in terms of the grants and subsidies. But the expenditure pattern, because of compensation of employees, is the one that is actually worrisome, because you would see, or you would know, and maybe the presentation by Treasury has also reflected that the usage of grants by the ministry has not been at a level where it is actually required or conforming or being consistent with the Division of Revenue Act, because the money was actually used most of the time for operating. So I'm getting a sound. I'm not sure whether it directs me to stop a bit or should I continue, Chair. Can I get the direction?
You have 3 minutes to wrap up, but there is some of the participants who are just... Brody, you know, we told people to mute the microphone. They're not doing that. Admin, can you assist me now to take off those elements out of the meeting? Because it's very disruptive. Yes, proceed. You have got 3 minutes to wrap up.
Okay, Chair. Then the next slide deals with the performance of the grant and subsidy. And you would see there the grants that were allocated, 790 million in 2015 financial year, and then 774 million in 18-19 financial year. But you will see there's that decline when you do that comparison. It's because in the 18-19 financial year, for instance, the EPWP, the Metro, because of the non-performance in terms of the grants, were not allocated or did not perform in other financial years. And then it affected the allocation for the period 18, hence the decline of a deficit of about 15.7 million. And the next slide then shows, in terms of the graph, what I've just alluded to. So these are the next slides. Also, after that graph represent, and you could see there during the period how the Metro actually performed around the conditional grants, and those were the listed conditional grants that were unspent by the Metro. And the next slide is just a schematic representation of the facts covered in the previous slide. Chair, may I then, on the basis of time, say I will then pause there, but the presentation covers all these areas around the audit outcomes, what were the audit outcomes in 15-16 financial year as compared to the 18-19 financial year. And as a result of those challenges I've reflected on, the outcome has actually regressed. The Metro has regressed in terms of the audit outcome. And then those are the facts that has actually caused the both the national and provincial government to intervene in terms of Section 139, Subsection 5, which deals with the financial recovery plan. And currently, Chair, there have been challenges because of political instability in the municipality, which is currently being attended to. And I think now the work of the intervention of the executive council team that has been deployed there, and the war room teams that have been established between COPTA, National Treasury, and Provincial COPTA, and Provincial COPTA Treasury, they are actually now beginning to actually improve when it comes to services. Though there are challenges there and there because of the revenue, Chairperson. Let me thank you on that note, Chairperson, and I will await questions so that we can clarify some of the areas in terms of our presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, HOD Mukiti Duma. We appreciate you also taking the time wherever you are to make sure that you come and account to this committee as always. So you'll await the questions as they come. Can I then hand over to the acting executive mayor, Councillor Lebohang Masoetsa, to introduce the issues. He will decide whether he's going to do the presentation, the whole of it himself, or will allow the MM to do the same. To also welcome the chief whip, the speaker, and the MMC for corporate services, including Kantela Gwane, as introduced by the MEC Finance. Over to you, Acting Executive Mayor.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
Just go up a bit and be in the center of the frame because you are at the extreme. Yes, up a bit.
Oh,
there you go.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by saluting all the members that honourable members that are here. The Chairperson of the Demarcation Board, the President of SALGA, and Protocol Observed. I first would like to start by acknowledging all the presentations and appreciating the opportunity you've given to us, Chairperson, to come and address this matter. It's long overdue. It has, as the previous presenter, the HOD of COFTA has alluded, a very negative impact to the municipality. I think the chairperson of the demarcation board, who was before we actually amalgamated with the former Naledi municipality and Southpan, was the executive mayor in Mangaung, and at one stage at that time Mangaung was actually seen as a construction site because things were moving smoothly. I know that the amalgamation of the former Naledi and Southpan was somehow politically influenced by the people there who were living there, because from time to time they were interacting with us. I think the pressure actually came there because in 2013, the council first rejected, but in 2015, it was implemented. The amalgamation of former Naledi and Southpan, I must say, as the previous presenter alluded, that it came with very negative effects to Mangaung. There is no economic base there. The unemployment rate is very high. And I must also indicate that we are, as the metro, also a border metro with Lesotho. And, you know, the negative impacts. We have a flood of people from Lesotho who are looking for greener pastures, who are coming in all and settling in all these areas, particularly Wepener, De Westdorp, Van Stadenstress. They settle in Botshabelo, Thabantsho, and they settle also in Bloemfontein. And those people ultimately have to be provided with services. And that's one of the burdens that we as the municipality experience, and it's very negative to us. Chairperson, the presentation of Mangaung will cover the profile of the metro, background of the amalgamation process, public participation, consultative processes, public participation metrics, perspective, summary of public inputs, managing amalgamation, budget and liabilities, asset management, and and revenue management, Naledi pre-amalgamation, governance challenges, financial challenges, service delivery challenges, institutional challenges, and accomplishments. Chairperson, with that, I would like to invite or introduce the city manager, Advocate Danki Sobia, who will cover the presentation of the municipality. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Acting Executive Mayor. Can you proceed with the presentation? You have 10 minutes to wrap up everything. Unmute your microphone, please. Unmute. Thank you.
Honorable Chair, thank you. Good afternoon to honorable members, all MMCs, protocol observed chair. I've just been given a very short time. I'll try to skip most of the slides where they've been covered. Chair, I don't know if I must load from my side or it will be loaded from the secretary at that side. Thank you, Chair.
What is the arrangement?
Chair, I can quickly load from my side.
Yes, Advocate said you must load from your side. There you go. Proceed, MM. MM, proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry for that. I'm saying I'll skip some slides due to time constraints given to me. Yes. Chair, this is just an overview of the city. That we were a category B until 2000, and then from 2011 we migrated to category A, and as a result, previously we had Bloemfontein, Botshabelo, Tabantsu, but later the four new towns were added, and then our city is one of the largest geographically that was mentioned, Chair, in terms of the land size. That is a 9,000, just over 9,000 square kilometers, Chair. I'm trying to move the slide.
That background info is common cause is known. Deal with the substantial issues.
Okay.
That you have to deal with. Those ones the members have read for themselves. Otherwise, you'll exhaust your time.
Chair, whilst we're still dealing with the slides moving down, I'm going to the slides that is dealing with the issues on governance challenges, Chair. To indicate that as a result of amalgamation, the new towns resulted in one of our biggest ward chair, which poses in terms of councillor public participation interface, some challenges there because of the distances between the three towns, and also the fact that it also includes parts of Tabantsu and Botshabelo as part of the town. Chair, on the next one will be the issues on financial situation as a result of amalgamation, Chair, to indicate that yes, there was a transitional grant, but as opposed to the restructuring grant, there was no allocation made. So the city had to use internal funds and resources to deal with the service delivery and backlog issues in the former towns, Chair. And then at the time, the processes as outlined by National Treasury, the approval of the separate budget was done. And then immediately in December, as part of adjustment, a consolidation of one budget. But we then realized a huge backlog share, which included in the main, the biggest challenge there was around water and sewer leakage, where there was a 80% non-revenue losses in terms of water. So this, the then budget of the metro had to be redirected to address all the challenges of the former Naledi towns. But also, as Ocholi also indicated, Chair, there was an immediate spike in terms of the salary bill, because then previously province was assisting the Naledi municipality, but immediately when the metro took over and amalgamated, the salaries of the employees were to be paid from the coffers of the metro. But in addition to paying the salaries, there was an upward adjustment of the salaries, because they had to be in par with other metro officials, Chair, and that resulted in immediate increase of about 30%. Chair, the other thing was that at the time there were outstanding debtors and creditors, creditors of former Naledi in terms of the financial situation, including those amounting to just over 9 million, which the city had to service, amongst others, third party. I'll give the details on that, and then salaries of employees. And then there were those unspent grants at that time of about 4.7 million. But Chair, one of the implications was that because of population size of the towns, the numbers did not bring any difference in terms of the annual allocation of the metro in terms of equitable share, because the numbers did not increase the threshold, Chair. We are also indicating, Chair, that there was an inheritance of just over 41 million of overspending on the budget on items that were not provided for and not catered for. I've also already spoken about the issue of the employee cost. Chair, I'll skip this one in terms of that was the situation then when we amalgamated. But this is just a breakdown of one or some of the key accounts that the metro had to settle, amounting to about 13 million. But what then, as I'm saying, immediately in December, council decided to redirect resources and funding to eradicate and deal with the backlogs. So this is how the city then, post-amalgamation, redirected funding to help deal with major problems, as I was saying, the sewer and water were the big problems, where the water pumps were not functioning. There was regular sewer spillages and overflow in the area. So what other challenge it brought for the city, Chair, was that now the city had to have a wider area to service within the then limited resources that were existing, because there was no additional resources that were provided to the city, which had an impact on our maintenance budget, also inheriting aging workforce. But the infrastructure that was aging and non-existent, Chair. And then one of the challenges was the issue that the, as an example, the landfill site was not approved. This, Chair, is a reflection of the state of the road network as at that time that had to be dealt with. And to get to the right situation, Chair, we are master plan indicates that about 8.5 million will be needed on an annual basis over the next 10 years. So this is just a picture to indicate some of the situation that was prevailing and the crisis that we had there. And then the overall backlogs and estimates in terms of the financial implications that was required to deal with those backlogs, Chair. on sanitation, the state of some of the infrastructure and the vandalism that was there. So the city had to direct a lot of resources to have these things in order so that the citizens can receive services in a sustainable manner, but also at the level that the city was rendering in respect of other regions or towns of the city. But in terms of the institutional capacity, say we are just reflecting a few of them. For the sake of time, I will not deal with that. What we did and what is the current situation regarding the process of incorporation. So we're also saying this is the total number of employees. Former lady, they were 149, Southbank. There were 23 employees that came into the city, because in terms of Southbank, it was not an incorporation of the municipality, but an incorporation of one of the towns of Masilonyane local municipality. And then we are also indicating how the employee cost rose as a result of amalgamation, chair, in relation to the new staff that were incorporated. Chair, in brief, this is how we've been working with National Treasury, National Kota Province, in terms of supporting the city to navigate some of these challenges and to find its footing, chair. And then we are also reflecting on a number of, despite the challenges, particularly the financial difficulties as a result of, amongst others, the amalgamation, we are reflecting on things that the city did, particularly in those areas, to make sure that citizens are receiving proper and right services, chair. And they are in a number of areas of service delivery, chair. So it's in brief what we have done, chair. I had to respect time. My apologies. Thank you, chair.
Thank you, advocate. You've tried to respect time. Thank you so much. Can we remove the presentation from the screen? Thank you. Can I see the members that want to interact with the first four presentations plus the Free State and Mangaung?
Bring chair.
Thank you, number one. I'm checking on my... There's one Mulefe Murake, you can't be raising your hand now. I don't know for what reason. Can you put your... Is it only Honorable Brink, colleagues?
Pumza.
Pumza? Who else? Okay. I presume it's the two. Can you start, Brink?
Thanks very much, Chair. I'm going to ask you to allow me to keep my camera off because of conditions here on my side. Thanks very much, Chair. I appreciate it. Because there's so much material to work through and still to come, Chair, I'm not going to say much, only comment on the presentations by the board, the department and treasury in broad terms, and a few observations. The first is, it's very important that whatever amalgamations, mergers and other changes are made to the boundaries of municipalities, they must happen as a means to an end. In other words, they can't happen as ends in themselves. So to have a metro in a province is not sufficient reason for amalgamation and boundary changes. Or to get better salaries for the officials is not sufficient reason. In fact, these amalgamations usually serve the purpose, or must serve the purpose, of increasing the revenue base. There are other reasons as well, but usually it's that municipalities aren't viable, and so they have to join forces. But as we have clearly heard here, and it's something that I think as a member of the committee, I must emphasize and highlight, that an amalgamation is an intervention that is extremely costly and has got long-term consequences. It's a disruption into a system. It's almost like surgery, and the patient takes a very long time to recover, so that the benefit of the amalgamation might not even be experienced at all. One example that's been referred to is Tshwane, a place that I have some experience, and 9 years after that merger, there are still, for example, officials who have different employment conditions because they were initially employed in smaller municipalities. So not only did they have to get more money, but they had to get things like travel allowances and so forth to cover the large geographic area. And if you speak to the former mayor of Tshwane today, Mayor Ramakgopa, he would tell you that Tshwane was shortchanged. Well, this is an opinion, it's a contested view, but he's probably right. Tshwane was shortchanged by about R1 billion when that amalgamation happened. So the point is not to speak about specifics, but just to highlight the fact that we have to be very, very conservative and cautious when making these decisions, because they've got long-term consequences and the benefits might be wiped out entirely. Hopefully the board gets that from the chairperson's comments. It seems so. Then, Chair, the second issue that I see, and I think there's also been an acknowledgement, is that public participation is not done properly in these cases. I had a look, and I don't want to comment on a presentation that hasn't been made yet, but one of the presentations, you look at the slide on public participation, and there's a blank page. So there is some public participation in that presentation, but I think that does point to the need for very, very detailed stakeholder engagements before these things happen, because it affects the legitimacy of that local polity. And then, Chairperson, I'm obviously looking forward to hearing from the other municipalities that have been affected by amalgamations. I think that's a very important part of this exercise. And it's so much information I hope that we're going to get done today. But then I think if the board can give us the benefit of all of their recent case studies into the successes and failures of these amalgamations beyond just PowerPoint presentations, so that members can peruse in their own time and apply their own minds, that would be great. Thanks very much, Chairperson.
Thank you so much, Honorable Brink, for reserving the questions to the other affected municipality. Can I then note Honorable Mpumza, then you'll be followed by Honorable Kalipi. Proceed. Honorable.
Thank you, Chair. Am I audible?
Honorable. So, sure, you are. Very.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chair. Let's welcome these presentations from both the COCO Demarcation Board and the National Treasury. The presentations say they indicate that what is running through all these presentations, the critical factor is that the demarcation or redetermination of municipal boundaries, whether you are delimiting wards, is a matter that requires a huge administrative cost. That should be a matter when planned and budgeted for. It would not go wrong. But the indication here is that we were actually merging viable and non-viable municipalities.
And what is critically clear is that merging a viable and a non-viable municipality would not on its own expand the revenue of the viable municipality. Instead, what it is, indications that, and these reports, is that these amalgamations, because they were not informed by a entire diagnostic report, that would indicate the extent of the maladministration or the extent of financial distress of such particular municipalities. For instance, Chepesin, the municipalities that were merged with the former Kam Depot, which is, was then Graaf Reinet, which is today Dr. Beth Nodier. For instance, the former Ikwezi municipality, by the moment that municipality was being merged with a viable municipality type depot, that municipality was in the ICU. The whole staff was being paid from funds from the district and the province. And the indication was that taking that municipality and merging it with the viable Kam Depot, which is now Dr. Beth Nodier.
Good idea.
Dr. Beth Nodier, that municipality, its revenue would not expand. Alternatively, this merger had contracted the viability and the sustainability of the revenue of the then Kam Depot, because we were bringing in here two municipalities, those assets were far less than their liabilities. And the indication is that if the budget, because this action was by national legislation, the Demarcation Act is a national, not a local matter. And then therefore, when re-demarcating, this matter should have been budgeted for. So the demarcation transition grant was not adequate to address the debts of those municipalities being incorporated to five municipalities. And thereby, the economy and the revenue of the five municipality was heavily eroded. It could not carry the load of a non-viable, non-financial area. It could not carry that load, both in terms of services and in terms of, because as long as again we rely on this formula, you for cutting the slice, and the determinant of the formula is population. So smaller municipalities, because of that particular fact, because despite what Treasury says, that the PSC grant conditional is growing to smaller and poor municipalities, it is not adequate to address, because their capital expenditure is far less than the threshold required to finance or to surface a 1 kilometer that requires a threshold of 18 million. Then this thing, it had to be radically changed. If demarcation is to take place, it is important that financial injection should be loaded into those struggling distressed municipalities before actually pushing them into integration or a merger, or else that the debts of those municipalities should have been cleared before they actually come into a measure. That financial injection, I know that the issue here has been debated to say, no, it would have been a loan to assist these municipalities that are struggling if we give them a grant. But the matter is, that envelope would remain open forever and it would expand, as you could see, that the debts of ESCOM and the water utilities are actually ballooning in these particular municipalities. So I think a matter here is to address the financial position of those municipalities and deliberately create a viability through a financial injection by Treasury and DCOG, so that municipalities would actually begin to sustain themselves. Otherwise, there is no other solution. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Bumza. Can we allow Honorable Mgalipi?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just want to say that I fully agree with Honorable Mpumza. Chairperson, let me just switch it off my video. The thinging is not stable here.
Okay, can I then excuse Honorable MEC Ngata from the Eastern Cape? There's a protest in Amatole District Municipality as we speak. Then the HOD, Mr. Fani, will lead the COPTA delegation henceforth and then present on behalf of the department. Proceed, Mkalipi.
Okay, thanks very much, Chairperson. Chair, I just want to agree with colleagues on the issue of the really problem of why this amalgamation is becoming a problem is the issue of resources. And it's good that we're going to receive a presentation from different provinces just to speak directly to their issues as provinces. But after receiving those presentations from COPTA, from SALGA, from National Treasurer, I think it gives us a clear picture as the committee. As well as from the MDB. And if you check the conclusion on the MDB presentation from the chair of the MDB board, he is proposing that this may be in an instance to put moratorium for further amalgamation. And Chairperson, this process is very painful because it started more than 5 years ago. So now you begin to ask yourself, if the process of mergers of municipalities started 5 years ago and we are still debating it at this stage, are we going to arrive to a destination whereby we are going to agree all of us that no, these municipalities in KZN, they must be a merger or not? So therefore, Chairperson, one of the things that they are raising here is COCTA is the issue of capacity. I think I can't remember what slide was that, but on the legislative provision, the issue of capacity in terms of administrative, in terms of finances, infrastructural, and so on. And when you listen to the presentation from the NT as well, they speak about those viabilities. Before amalgamation take place, they must be considered. But the fact of the matter is resources. They can do all those studies that are mentioned there. The effect of the matter is resources, as Babu Mpumza is putting it very clear, to say that if this program is not going to be resourced, it means that it's a failure before it even started. Chairperson will agree with me. When we went to oversight, when we started in KZN, we were presented with municipalities that were struggling. And the MEC of KZN, when he was speaking about, I think is Mpofana, the municipality there in Moyo River. And he said amongst all the municipalities that are under Section 139, this one, he was hoping that this process will take the municipality to be measured with other municipalities. But when we engaged as a committee, we said, no, but this municipality seems as if they can generate their revenue. So it seems as if there is also a misunderstanding between the understanding at a local level and the understanding at a national level. Because I remember Honorable saying, take us through to say, no. It can't be that the municipality is struggling. And one of the problems that the chair also identified about that particular municipality was the issue that, no, in terms of taking decision at the council level, it also needs to be rechecked because you find the mayor is a mayor and he also a speaker. So he's a referee and a player. So okay, I'm sure he is also protected by the Act. So those are the things that need to be considered along the lines. And when SALGA present, they also mentioning the issue of limited planning on the whole process and the lack of proper planning as well. So now it's also give us a picture to say that it means we are not ready. SALGA is telling us about the lack of planning. The department is telling about the issue of capacity. The National Treasurer is also saying, no, before you continue implementing this process, you must make sure that what are we going to get into financial viability at the end of the day. So therefore, it means, Chairperson, when this process is being planned at a cocktail level, maybe the department does not include the departments from the beginning. That's what I'm also getting as a gap. When they go to the National Treasurer to say that, no, we need money to implement this, that's where they're going to be told, no, in fact, did you consider this issue of viability? No, if not, it means that even if you can take this municipality and measure with this one, it's also going to be a problem. So if you check with the report, in the report of the department, those municipalities, according to the MINIMEC that took place in 2014, whereby the MECs were expected to identify municipalities that were not doing well. So there is also Ugu that was identified by the MEC of KZN. And when we have done our oversight that day, Chair, we also raise a concern in terms of 1 billion that is not accounted for. But according to that list from the minister, the MEC by that time, she I think it was Minister Dube Ncube, if I'm not mistaken, she put Ugu as part of the list of the municipalities in KZN that is not doing well. But now, when we go and do our oversight, those people, they have used 1 billion rand, which they can't account for. It means Ugu municipality, they have a revenue, a very good revenue that they have. It's just that in terms of accountability, it's a problem. So therefore, all these reasons that you are getting from different sectors, which is COGTA, which is National Treasure, which is Demarcation Board, it also, leave us with many questions than answers as I'm giving you those examples. So therefore, Chair, maybe let us listen to other provinces, and we're going to maybe to get more information, because now we still have to listen and we still have to determine what is it that is a problem. But I like the way Babu Mpumza have put it. If you don't have to put the budget along this program, it means that even what you are going to plan is not going to be implemented successfully. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. There's been a request for Mangaung that they're going to go to a council meeting to adopt a budget lately. That's why I'm allowing us to discuss the presentation. I thought you're going to do it. Whatever you do, whatever Treasurer, MDP, and everybody is raised in relation to Mangaung, you can be doing that. That's what we're trying to do, knowing, bearing in mind that we're going to get the other provincial presentations. Let's then move to Honorable Shou. Honorable Shou.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. And I also welcome the presentation by DECOG, Demarcation Board, and Treasury. I only having one question: that has National Treasury undertaken any formal diagnosis of the factors causing the perennial underspending of conditional grants, including the demarcation transitional grant in the amalgamated municipalities? I thank you, Chairperson.
Swift and short, Honorable Feather. Honorable Feather.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I will start with the Mpumalanga.
Mpumalanga not yet. Still coming, Mpumalanga.
Okay, no, it's fine for this.
Hmm.
That's fair with me, please.
Okay.
Is it only Mpumalanga you wanted to read?
No, it's not only Mpumalanga.
Deal with the presentations as raised by Salga, Decock, NT, and the Free State, and the demarcation board, including Free State and Mangaung for now. That's where we are.
That's fine, sir. You know the amalgamation process in terms of the tax base. Amalgamation assumes that the tax base will improve the revenue collection. If so, what then becomes the solution of massive unemployment and corruption overwhelming some of the to what extent does the support provided to the amalgamated municipalities deal with erstwhile municipalities in terms of dealing with employment while decisions are taken?
Honorable Show, can you please mute your microphone, please? It's causing such a very huge disruption on, we can't even hear Honorable Kles. Honorable Kles, so please, mute your microphone. Mute your microphone. Proceed, Honorable Kles.
Yes, that was my first question, Chair. The second question, in terms of the litigations over contracts that were not honored by previous entities, showing huge challenges with the number of creditors that are coming forth to litigate claiming millions of non-payment. What actions have the department taken to ensure mitigation of such challenges emanating from erstwhile municipalities? Number three, being some scholars, Chairperson, have deemed the amalgamated municipalities as monolithic solutions incapable of reflecting the diverse preferences of the citizens. Hence, amalgamation reforms are often motivated by the argument that larger municipalities are able to provide local public services at lower unit cost in light of the fact that majority of municipalities facing challenges of unemployment, poverty, and weak infrastructure are in rural areas. What immediate action has the Department of Culture to ensure taken to ensure that the status quo of rural municipalities is corrected even outside the amalgamation process to solidify the amalgamation in terms of the fiscal capacity? Is this not a process in which the country has decided on moving towards urbanization in line with the current patterns of the economy than improving rural municipalities to be able to manage its affairs in terms of the constitution? Number four, Chairperson, is that according to COCTA, a third of municipalities are dysfunctional and unviable, while another third are at risk, and the remaining third are functional and viable. Is there a common understanding of what constitutes a viable municipality? How has merging municipalities created financially viable and self-reliant municipalities in terms of correcting the unviability of municipalities that were not viable? What unintended economic consequences were experienced, and what measures are currently in place to correct such shortcomings? Is there a link between functionality and boundary change, or has amalgamation resolved functionality challenges? If yes, how so? The last question, Chairperson, pertains to, does the integration of rural and urban municipalities broaden the revenue base and the argument that bigger is better and bigger is cheaper? If so, who are the winners and who are the losers between the public and the private? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Schleser. On my side, I have this issue that raised with regard to Mangau. What was the experience with the placement of all staff from the other former municipalities that were made to Mangau? And how long did this process take to conclude? The other question to National Treasury is whether the National Treasury has undertaken any formal diagnosis of the factors causing the perennial underspending on conditional grants, including the demarcation transition grant in the amalgamated municipalities. These are some of the then the other issue as raised by Honorable Mukaliti with regard to the conclusions on the demarcation board. In their presentation, they've raised some pertinent issues that we think Treasury will be able to talk to us. Because you recall with this amalgamation, then it means the racial population and everything of the municipality becomes big. Like you merge two municipalities into one, they become three. But in terms of the grant that's given, then it's the grant for one municipality. I want Treasury to explain this on us. And then with regard to the, in the case of the new municipality that was established, because in this case, for this period under review, it was only Collins Chaman that was new, its newly established municipality. In terms of the development dispensation, because you recall that Collins Chaman in particular, it's an underdeveloped municipality with nothing, no city. How has Treasury then dealt with that? The other issues that one wants to raise, which feels they are very critical for this presentation, with regard to COPT, DG and the team, has COPT conducted a public satisfaction survey to determine how the communities are experiencing this amalgamation in order to bring the voice of the people into this debate? Because ourselves, when we interact with communities, they will tell you it was better when we were in the municipality. Now we have to travel over 100 kilometers to go to this new city. And at some point, you find that those old service centers with the amalgamation, they get closed, such that the people then have to travel long distances in order to access service. Then the other issue that I want also both you and the demarcation board to respond to is the issue about this issue. When you demarcate a weak municipality with a well-functioning municipality, at some point it might make sense. But then there are times wherein then you demarcate two weak municipalities, you amalgamate them together, and that does not necessarily strengthen the municipality. I think you'll see it when we deal with the issue of Mokopongo in Limpopo, Mokopongo and Modimule amalgamation. The issue that I'm talking about, as and when we deal with that report, you'll be able to deal with that. The issue of staff, I've raised it in relation to Mangau, but this is a matter that cut across. I think DCOC and the demarcation board, you must be able to deal with it. Because this issue of HR issues that are related to higher grading, they create a staff administration stability problems. You know, all over wherever there was amalgamation, I raised it in my opening remarks. Then the issue that I'm trying to throw to you, DCOC and demarcation board, is that shouldn't then therefore staff matters be dealt with more extensively in Section 12 notices? than to leave it to individual municipality, because definitely when you grade different municipalities with different gradings, then the new entity has got the responsibility to make sure that employees doing the same job must be paid the equal pay. And that's where you've got a lot of unhappiness under the circumstances. But I felt those are the matters that for now we need to raise this. Wendy, there was an issue that the chairman of the Demarcation Board raised to say the money that was requested was over billion plus. Then Treasury, you only gave only 400 million, not than the billion requested. But when you later on say that it was an agreement between the multidisciplinary team, I'll want to also understand then how did it come? Then this issue of the one over a billion plus, was it a thumbsack or it was based on the realities that has to deal with this matter? To say then if it's the same department, maybe DCOC must also respond to that. You requested over a billion, then Treasury gives you 400 million. When the Demarcation Board raises it, then Treasury says it was just an agreement between the multidisciplinary parties. What is what here? So those are the issues that one wants clarity on. Who wants to start? Demarcation Board? Can I move to DCOC while I wait for Demarcation Board?
Chairperson?
Oh, you are here. Proceed.
Yes, I'm there, my chairperson. All right.
Okay.
I have taken note, chairperson, of the inputs that were made by Honorable Brink, and also the need to look into the report that we did as a study on amalgamations. And also have noted the inputs that were made subsequently on matters that members raised. But you see, Chairperson, and maybe as Obabu has sort of indicated, the perceptions, and these were perceptions, and I think now through these presentations and the reports, we are indicating otherwise, that if you amalgamate two municipalities, then there will be improvement on governance, there will be improvement on revenue collection, there will just be general improvement. And we are indicating that that is not the case up to date. And thanks for this engagement. And when it comes to matters of the transitional funding, as I indicated, Chairperson, in my concluding slide, particularly point two, that it is critical that adequate transition funding is made available on time for amalgamated areas to ensure that newly established entities effectively and properly manage the change process and related transitional programs. I think that is quite important, Chairperson. And I also, in a way, also alluded to other studies. The example that I was giving here was the issue of amalgamating East Berlin and West Berlin, how it was handled. And I think the committee can get more information in that regard. We can assist in that. But nonetheless, Chairperson, it is true. For instance, yes, the requests are there in terms of the reports from COCTA. And also, it is true that when we were doing a similar exercise, also with the municipality that was mentioned about the 10 billion that was requested, and they were then allocated 200 million. Even today, that municipality is still struggling to deal with matters of the death and so on. Dr. Mokgopa, of course, is one who can bear witness to that, because it was, he was also the leader, the mayor during that time in that municipality. But even if, Chairperson, we are basically saying these municipalities, they remain in distress. One factor that we need to take to consideration is already in most cases, we were amalgamating, merging municipalities that already were in distress. And the view that when they are in distress and you amalgamate them, they will have improvement. I think that is a myth now we are debunking in this discussion. And what is coming out here is that amalgamation is not necessarily a solution to distress municipalities. But of course, the issue of amalgamation, it has to be considered when you look into the slides that presented also. I think that was a slide, it was a slide, let me check on my slides here, Chairperson, a bit. It was slide 17 and 18, or where you would find that there is interdependence of people, communities, and economies in a in an area, and also the issue of spatial development planning has to be looked into. Let me give you an example, Chairperson. We might have to look into amalgamating, even if it's not now. When you are looking into the space that your Joburg city is having at the present moment, the space, of course, doesn't increase, it doesn't do anything, it remains constant. The number of people who are moving into the city is increasing on a daily basis. The same thing with major metros, I would ask, also the city of Cape Town and also Etowah. But mostly, this is more highlighted in the Joburg city with the studies that we are doing. So you are having a smaller space. The number of people are increasing. So ultimately, in order to increase on the space, you will have to consider the outlying municipalities to be part of this, let me call it now, for now, amalgamation. But in terms of the exercise that we are looking into, we are looking into the what we call the Greater Joburg City region. So I'm trying to say, it doesn't necessarily mean that you would not be able to look into amalgamation even in the future. But the main thing is it depends on the challenges that we are faced with. And those challenges should not necessarily be fiscal challenges. But we need to look into spatial development planning. You need also to look into the interdependence of people and communities and economies in a particular area when we are looking into the matters of amalgamations and so forth. But generally, that means that if you just amalgamate dysfunctional municipalities, as we indicated earlier in our presentation, that the bulk and most of municipalities are in distress. And basically, we need also to look into issues of DORA allocation. We need to look into matters of governance rather than just try to put them together and think that they will end up being functional. I think that's my take in trying to answer generally on some of the inputs and the need for clarity that members were putting forth in this discussion, my Chairperson. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Can we then allow Dikok to respond?
Chairperson, it's Kevin Naidoo, if I can come in. I do know that my DC has been experiencing some connectivity issues. Chair, you were very, clear with the question around whether we have conducted a public satisfaction survey around demarcation matters. And, the simple response is no, we have not. And perhaps, it is something that one should consider. But notwithstanding that, Chair, I think in certain instances, there was public outcry from a lot of stakeholders, specifically around certain areas, north of the country. I think we still hear, protest action or community raising issues around certain dissatisfaction as to where they are located. But to
be... G speaking. The what director? Director what?
Secondly, Chair, the issue around HR and staff matters. I think my reading of the legislation says that your Section 12 notice needs to be broad, in that it should provide for the organisational structures of the, let's say, the new or superseding municipality, but not necessarily the conditions of service for persons that would be moving from one municipality to the other. And I think it's deliberately so because, personnel matters, conditions of service, and these things are mostly bound by collective agreements, and it is something that would need careful consideration, in terms of how it moves forward. Thirdly, Chair, and I think National Treasury, Wendy Farmer, will also assist us in terms of responding to the financial implications question that you asked specifically. And when you look at slide 42 of the presentation that the department made, I think there was agreement that the demarcation transition grant would deal specifically only with transition matters. So it was not going to deal with issues relating to debt, etc. But those matters that would be transition related, and it's itemized in slide 42, Chairperson, some of those would mean the delivery models of individual municipalities, ICT requirements, the development of business models for service delivery, updating and refurbishment of master plans, etc., etc. And for each of those specific items, there was a value that was obtained. And I think, trying to recall back then, it was figures that the KZN department had arrived at, because as I had indicated in my presentation, they had already been, the boundaries in their province had already been determined 2 years prior to the determinations made in 2015. So we used that as a case study to inform the figures at which we had arrived at. So the 400 million rand was premised on that methodology. But suffice to say, Chair, there was a multidisciplinary team put together, Treasury, SALGA, ourselves, the provinces. The difference also in this round was that in the prior determinations where financial support was provided, the metros were excluded. In this instance, Mangaung was included as a recipient for the MDTG. And also from my reading recently, there was a grant, I think it was the urban development grant or something similar to that, that was allocated to Naledi, but because of the amalgamation, that specific grant was then allocated to the Mangaung Metro because of the amalgamation that had taken place. So that would be my response, as Chairperson, and I think maybe Wendy, if she has more information, can also respond to the financial implications question. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Dikok. Yes, Treasurer must say something. Wendy?
Thank you very, very much. The question about the transition, the demarcation grant, Dikok dealt with in quite a bit of detail and confirmed in more detail than what we've indicated. But quite a key point to make here, just to elevate the point that Dr. Naidu made, and that is that it just dealt with the cost that is directly attributable to the demarcation and not other costs that fall outside that. And that is also an equity issue. For example, if you look at the outstanding debt in a municipality and you then refund municipalities for their rear debt just because they amalgamated, what would municipalities do? And there's a lot of municipalities in the country that's got a rear debt. They say, but why don't we then also get compensated for that? So it will then create a big problem. So the issue that then needs to be looked at, how do you deal with the rear debt? And how do you deal with the rear debt that's actually increasing over time? And again, there is a working group and a whole structure in place to deal with the ballooning ESCOM and water board debts that's owed by municipality that's shared at the highest level, and are looking at all these issues in comprehensive way as well, and working out on strategies on how we can get this ballooning ESCOM and water board debt under control. There are some policy issues related to that as well that requires attention. So it's a comprehensive strategy, and SALGO is also part of it. National Treasury is also part of it, and DECOC as well. It would maybe be useful for the committee to have a detailed discussion. Municipalities and more rural municipalities, there's specifically allocations made available in an allocation to ensure that those municipalities get sufficient allocation. So in the local government equitable share, there's what we call, we take into account the number of councillors and the council seats within the municipality, but in addition to that, a municipality gets a base allocation or X amount that takes into account the ability of a municipality to raise its own revenue. So if there's three municipalities, of course, there will be three different municipalities, three different allocations, and therefore there will be three of those allocations. If there's one municipality, that three allocations will turn into one allocation because there's only one allocation. One municipality equals one allocation. For example, the same would have happened in the municipal infrastructure grant, where there's a minimum threshold. All municipalities, despite what the municipal infrastructure grant formula generates, all municipalities are guaranteed to receive at least 5 million allocations. So if the formula generates an allocation less than that, then the municipality is ensured to get at least 5 million. So again, the same will apply if you consolidate say if there's three municipalities to 5 million because there's only one. To ensure that smaller municipalities are not shortchanged completely because they've got small populations. So it is a tool that's been brought into the system to ensure that smaller municipalities do get decent allocations to perform their allocation, their function.
changed and reconvene it too. Then we can excuse the Free State team and the Mangaung colleagues because they are going to the council meeting. And then we'll come back and follow the order as I've indicated earlier. Let's just break for lunch and reconvene it too.
Agreed, Chair.
Thank you. See you at 2.
Thank you very much, Chairperson.